Welcome to this half-hour broadcast of AARP, the magazine, and AARP Bulletin. This is Carrie Minarchek. Today, we're going to go back to our AARP magazine with Tom Hanks on the cover. It's our October-November issue. We're going to begin with an article called You Be the Judge and Jury. What's your verdict on these real-life cases affecting Americans age 50-plus, by David Hockman. The issue, age discrimination victim or pantry thief? The situation. 1 year shy of 65, Bobby Nichols says he was forced out of his job as a facilities manager at Staples in La Mirada, California, after he claims enduring age-related jokes by higher-ups who regularly referred to him as an old coot and an old goat. Nichol, brought on 9 years earlier by an outside agency that typically pays more than Staples' hired employees receive, believed that his employers resented his larger paychecks and pushed him out, as they did other older employees. The company countered that Nichol was actually fired for stealing from the office cafeteria at lunchtime and after hours, and that he'd even admitted to taking 3 beverages and 1 bell pepper. The case. Nichol sued Staples mainly for age-based discrimination, harassment, retaliation, and defamation. The defendants contended that there was insufficient evidence of discrimination and that, in any case, Nichol, by lifting food and drink, simply violated Staples' zero-tolerance anti-theft policy, for which several other younger employees had likewise been fired. Your ruling? Is the company liable? The verdict? Yes. In February 2014, the Los Angeles Superior Court awarded Nichol, after appeal, $16 million in compensatory and punitive damages. Several older Staples workers alleged in the trial that they were also pressured out of jobs due to discrimination or retaliation, including one who described being derided for requesting medical accommodations following a stroke. After his dismissal, Nichol couldn't find work in California and was forced to relocate to Idaho. He showed signs of depression, anxiety, weight gain, and what his wife called a broken spirit, which left him just a shell of who he had been. For that claim of stealing, it was more like a bad joke. Staples called out Nichol for drinking 3 beverages after hours, which company officials conceded he'd later paid for, and eating a bell pepper from a salad that had fallen on the floor while he evaluated whether the refrigerators were working properly. Nichol testified that he'd later paid for the pepper, a whopping 68 cents. The lesson? If you think you're being wronged, don't give up, says Michael Delaney, a certified elder law attorney and member of the board of directors of the National Elder Law Foundation. A lot of people might just throw in the towel, but Nichol sensed that there was a campaign to push out older, higher-paid workers for younger people, and he stood up for what's right. The issue: gold digger or loving caregiver? The situation. In 2013, Frank A., names have been changed to preserve confidentiality, a former theater stagehand, died at age 92. His will, drafted 2 years earlier, created a special needs trust for his son, Robbie, who was in a nursing home following a stroke. Robbie died shortly after his father, and the remainder of the estate, nearly $4 million, was left to Frank's second cousins under his will. At the time of Robbie's passing, however, his cousins were surprised to learn of a gift Frank had made to a family friend, Jane B., in the form of unsigned stock certificates valued in excess of $2 million. According to Jane, Frank called her to his house one evening in 2012 and handed her an envelope saying, "I want you to have this." Jane, who had known Frank and Robbie since she was a child, at one point Frank had offered to adopt Jane, put the envelope away. After Frank died, she notified the estate attorney about the certificates, and they were transferred to her name. The case? Frank's cousins filed the case in probate court on the basis of unjust enrichment and undue influence by Jane, which resulted in the gift. The cousins alleged fraud, deceit, and misrepresentation. In her defense, Jane testified she befriended Frank and Robbie when she was 7 years old and had remained friends ever since, even making numerous long-distance trips to care for them both near the end of their lives. The cousins countered that Frank, a sophisticated investor, had not mentioned the gift or Jane in his will. Jane's team responded that the stocks were freely given to her as a gift, independent of the will. Your ruling? Who gets the millions? The verdict? Jane does. The cousins made a compelling case, arguing that there was no valid delivery of the stocks to Jane. Why hadn't Frank mentioned this to his broker or lawyer, for instance? And that a savvy investor such as Frank would have been shrewder about the transfer. But the court concluded that Frank intentionally gave the gift in appreciation of Jane's friendship and service to his family, which was corroborated by witnesses. The case also revealed that Jane was not financially sophisticated and had never opened the envelope until after Frank died. With the court's favorable ruling, she got to keep the stocks and her dignity. The lesson? When it comes to passing along assets, even with smaller estates, put things in writing as clearly as possible and make your wishes expressly known to reduce the possibility of misunderstandings and conflict after one's death, says Jane's attorney, Richard Miller. Communication won't eliminate the risk of disputes, but it significantly increases the likelihood of your wishes coming to pass. The issue? Generous kin or addled aunt? The situation. For more than 30 years, 84-year-old Jenna T. Dersey owned and operated a small beachside motel next door to the triplex apartments she owned in St. Pete Beach, Florida. Getty, her great-nephew, had lived with her temporarily after coming to the U.S. 15 years earlier, at age 20, from their native Lithuania. In December 2017, Jannetty sold one of the triplex buildings to Getty for $50,000, a fraction of its $250,000 market value. Real estate agent Diana Sames called foul. She said the Jannetty's faculties were failing and that the great-nephew exploited his aunt during the sale. The case? Sames petitioned a judge to put the Jannetty under the control of a guardian, testifying that Jannetty was not thinking clearly. Getty countered that the agent had shown little interest in his great-aunt until the property was transferred to his name. As for Jannetty's capabilities, Getty and the tenant said she was doing just fine on her own and still managing to run the motel. Getty was helping drive her to the grocery store, church, and doctor appointments. Your ruling? Should Jannetty be put under state supervision? The verdict. On April 18, 2018, a Florida judge declared Jannetty Dursey incapacitated and appointed a professional guardian, Tracy Samuel, to oversee her everyday and financial affairs. Samuel, who manages multiple guardianships, moved Jannetty from her motel into an assisted living facility and forbade Getty and other family members and friends to see her. Samuel also sued him, using Jannetty's money to void the sale of the property. Getty has been billed about $75,000 in attorney's fees, he says. The lesson? Almost all guardianships are avoidable with advance planning, says Syracuse University law professor Nina A. Cohn, a guardianship expert. If you execute power of attorney for your health care and finances, even if you lose your ability to make decisions yourself, a court appointment will very rarely be necessary, adds Diana Knoll, AARP senior legislative representative. Most states continue to improve adult guardianship laws to prevent abusive situations, and many seek to meet an individual's needs with less restrictive alternatives, when appropriate, so the adult can retain authority to make decisions. And our final case, the issue, bickering or harassment, the situation. In 2014, after her same-sex partner of 30 years died, Marcia Wetzel of Skokie, Illinois, moved into a senior housing complex where she asserted that residents began harassing her relentlessly for being openly gay. One woman at Glen St. Andrew Living Community, Wetzel claimed, overturned Wetzel's cafeteria table with a wheelchair, telling her, "Homosexuals will burn in hell." Wetzel, then in her late 60s, was spat upon, struck in the head, and tormented by homophobic slurs, she said, and she reported these incidents to the facility's staff. Management took steps initially to stop the harassment, but the physical and verbal abuse continued, Wetzel noted. She blamed Glen St. Andrew for not protecting her and for trying to evict her instead. Management dismissed the conduct as ordinary bickering between irascible, crotchety older residents who had the right to argue as they pleased. The case. Wetzel sued Glen St. Andrew, alleging that it failed to provide her with non-discriminatory housing and attempted to retaliate because of her complaints, both violations of the Federal Fair Housing Act. The facility argued that even if Wetzel's claims were true, which Glen St. Andrew disputed, the liability would fall on the tenants, not on facility management. Your ruling? Was the landlord responsible? The verdict? Pretty much. The case was filed in federal court in 2016 and dismissed in 2017 for failing to assert that the facility showed intent to discriminate. Wetzel appealed, and in a groundbreaking 2018 decision, the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that a landlord may be held liable under the Fair Housing Act for failing to protect a tenant from known discriminatory harassment at the hands of other tenants. Wetzel claimed that rather than taking action against the harassers, Glen St. Andrew's staff waged a campaign to minimize her complaints and isolate her, relegating her to a less desirable dining room seat, for instance, and barring her from common areas. I just go to my room and barricade my door and pray, Wetzel said at the time. I just felt like a slug, like I was nothing, like I wasn't even human. After the Court of Appeals ruling, the matter was resolved, and though the details are confidential, her lawyer reports that Wetzel, now 72, is happily living in a senior complex in Chicago. The lesson? Speak up. If you're experiencing harassment and discrimination at the hands of residents where you live, whether based on religion, sex, race, disability, or other protected categories of the Fair Housing Act, it's the landlord's responsibility to put an end to it, says Karen Louie, lead counsel in the Wetzel case. Remember, you're protected under the law. And the same safeguards apply when renting or buying a home, getting a mortgage, or seeking housing assistance. We all deserve to live in a community that's safe, without fear of being bullied or harassed, agrees Lisa Marsh Ryerson, AARP Foundation president. We participated in this lawsuit because the fair housing rights of older adults should never be subject to discrimination on any basis. Next, we're going to go to back to the beginning of the magazine to an upfront article called What I Know Now, where we've asked questions of Julie Andrews. The beloved actress-singer riffs on humor, whistling, and new beginnings. Always be prepared. Discipline for me is very important. In other words, if I've done my homework, if I know what I'm doing, then I can launch rather than just flail around. I was trained that way all my life by Madam Lillian Stiles Allen. From when I was age 9 until the day she died in 1982, she was my singing teacher and taught me good diction, placement, everything. A wonderful lady and a huge mentor. How lucky can a girl get? A spoonful of sugar. Well, God help me if I wasn't nice. My mom used to say, "Don't you dare pull rank. There's always someone who can do the same thing you do and much better than you." And I was young and knew I had a lot to learn. Regrets. She's had a few. Everybody thinks I come from Windsor Castle or something, but I was so busy working as a kid. The only thing I had time for was to read on trains and planes. When I didn't go to college because I was working, I said to my mom, "Are you sure I'm not going to miss college?" She said, "Oh, you'll have a much better education from life." But I always wished I'd had a real education. How Mary Poppins' creator viewed Andrews as the nanny. "I don't know what P.L. Travers thought. She said to me, 'You're very pretty, and you've got the nose for it.' I'm sure she laughed all the way to the bank. She was very tough and canny." Having a voice. I would have been quite a sad lady if I hadn't had the voice to hold on to. The singing was the most important thing of all, and I don't mean to be Pollyanna about how incredibly lost I'd have been without that. And losing her voice in 1997. When I woke up from an operation to remove a cyst on my vocal cord, my singing voice was gone. I went into a depression. It felt like I'd lost my identity. But by good fortune, that's when my daughter Emma and I had been asked to write books for kids, so along came a brand new career in my mid-60s. Boy, was that a lovely surprise. But do I miss singing? Yes, I really do. Laughing together. I can't imagine a good marriage without a good sense of humor. We laughed a lot. Blake, Edwards, the late director to whom she was married for 41 years, said to me, "The minute I saw you laughing at the outtakes I showed you, I thought, that's the girl for me." Whistle a happy tune. I'd love to be able to paint. I'd love to be a good cook, but I'm rotten. I don't have the patience for it. But I have to say, I am a very good whistler. A lot of singers are. And this was as told to Margie Rochlin. Julie Andrews, at 84, is an actress and the author of Home Work, a memoir of my Hollywood years, which is out on October 15th. Now we're going to go to an AARP portrait, a spotlight on members who inspire us. One more spin. After 75 years, a soldier's wish for a reunion is granted. An elite tank gunner during World War II, Clarence Smoyer destroyed 5 German tanks. After the war, he was more than happy to return to civilian life. In recent years, though, Smoyer has been dreaming of taking one more ride in an M4 Sherman tank. "It's more than just a machine," he told a friend. "I owe my life to that tank." So the friend planned a surprise. One morning last winter, Smoyer was at home in Allentown, Pennsylvania, when he heard a rumbling sound outside. He opened his front door to find a rented Sherman tank idling at his doorstep. Behind it were more than 100 friends, family, and neighbors. A police honor guard stood at attention before him. World War II reenactors saluted. As firefighters leaned a ladder against the machine, the crowd hushed. Would the nonagenarian be able to clamber up? His first steps drew cheers and applause. When he reached the turret, the crowd roared. Smoyer stood tall, snapped a salute, and held on as his dream came true. Clarence Smoyer, at 96, is a retired industrial processing plant supervisor. His tank division is the subject of the new book, Spearhead, by Adam Makos. Smoyer has been an AARP member since 1982. In the personal best section, my cause, Horses That Heal. Actress Jennifer O'Neill offers traumatized vets and their families a chance to reconnect. When he was 23 years old, my dad was an Air Force captain flying a B-17 in World War II. He was shot down by the Germans and interned in a prisoner of war camp, the one from the movie The Great Escape, for 2.5 years. So when I was in high school, I read about my dad in books. There was a tremendous amount of honor associated with his service. My parents were madly in love, and because they were so close, I felt kind of invisible as a kid. It was in an era where children were supposed to be seen and not heard, and my parents didn't understand the unconditional love I sought from dogs, cats, and especially horses. It took me years just to persuade them to let me get a dog. Then at 15, although I was very shy, I signed up with the Ford Modeling Agency and moved to New York City. I was determined that I was going to make enough money to buy a horse, and I did that. I was on a mission, which turned into a lifelong passion. I love how God recycles dreams. More than 50 years after I bought my first horse, I can share their amazing therapeutic wonder with the military and their families at our farm just outside Nashville, Tennessee. Since 2010, my team and I have served free of charge more than 4,000 veterans, active duty military, first responders, and their families at our equine program farm. We're a small organization. We have 10 to 12 animals. Some have been rescued, some have been donated, and some I've bred for my horse showing days. Post-traumatic stress is not just a war-related issue. Anyone can have PTSD, but war-related PTSD is a real epidemic. We offer a safe place for people to come and renew and restore their families and themselves. We work with veterans who may be having trouble reintegrating into civilian life or communicating with their kids or spouses. We help put them together. This is not a riding program. Interacting with a horse in a round pen teaches communication and trust. The horse mirrors your attitudes and your issues. Horses are flight animals. They, by their very nature, are waiting to get pounced on. A dog will naturally wag its tail and come up to you, but a horse assesses everything that's going on. A horse has 17 facial expressions, and we teach our guests to recognize them, to understand what the horses are saying. You have to be very present when you're dealing with a 1,500-pound horse. You can't be gazing off. You have to be aware. The relationship that's developed between that person or that family and the horse just shores up their confidence and the absolute need to be present and communicate. When you bond with a horse, there is something that supersedes the fear, the pain, and the insecurities you might carry. And when that horse turns around and hooks on, as it's called, and comes to you with nothing but trust, you've developed a relationship with that animal where it just goes, okay, we can be friends. It's all about communication. And that, if you really want to roll it up in a nutshell, is what life's about. As told to Pam Windsor. And Jennifer O'Neill, at 71, is best known for her role in Summer of 42. She is the proprietor of Hope and Healing at Hill and Glade in Nashville. And that's all we'll have time for today. Thank you for listening to this half-hour broadcast of AARP the Magazine and AARP Bulletin. Once again, this is Carrie Minarchek. Have a great week.